Welcome to the Movie Planet, Season 4, Episode 15. This week we're talking about 2007's National Treasure, Book of Secrets. With Joe.
My girlfriend kicked me out. I'm living with my dad, and my family killed President Lincoln.
And Caitlin.
When you get to a conclusion without asking and you happen to be right, you got lucky.
Well, welcome to the Movie Planet. Joining me today is the Abraham Lincoln to my John Wilkes Booth, the Emily to my Patrick, and the Abigail to my Ben, Caitlin.
So am I Abraham Lincoln or am I John Wilkes Booth?
You're Abraham Lincoln.
I don't want to be Abe.
Fine, you're Booth.
Cool.
Yeah, you're Tarzan.
Great. He is Tarzan.
I tried to come up with pairs that were contentious.
Well, you hit the nail on the head.
I don't think we will be for this one.
No, I think we're going to be damn succinct.
This will be pretty good.
Yep.
This week, Caitlin has accidentally nominated.
Thank you.
I treated you right.
Yep.
2007's National Treasure Book of Secrets for the Family Film Pantheon. See, when we pick one movie in a franchise, we have to do all the movies in the franchise. If it was up to her, she'd only do the first movie. But this is like getting dessert since it's a train wreck.
I mean, never mind. We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Well, the Family Film Pantheon consists of seven and only seven films. Currently, the films in this preserve are at number one, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Go ahead.
Yay!
Number two, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Number three, National Treasure. Number four, Gremlins. And number five, bringing up the rear, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. The higher the grade we give it, the longer it may be staying there. Only a film with a higher grade can kick it down on its ass to the Pantheon in the future. So we will discuss it, analyze it, grade it, and see if it lands amongst the greats. But guess what? This one ain't.
Nope.
It's going to be in there.
At the bottom.
Yeah, it'll be a number six.
I feel like we're being biased as hell. The whole point is to analyze and then determine.
Well, we've already analyzed it.
Okay.
So this week we are talking about 2007's National Treasure Book of Secrets, a movie made for an estimated $130 million that brought in $459.2. It brought in more money.
Right. That's because people were so excited by what they saw to begin with.
They were psyched.
Like me. And you let me down, Turtle Tob.
Written by Cormac Wibberly and Marianne Wibberly, directed by John Turteltaub, and music by Trevor Rabin. So the four people that are there were on the first movie.
Yeah, unfortunately. So yeah. They really let me down.
Starring Nicolas Cage as Benjamin Franklin Gates, Justin Bartha as Riley Poole, Diane Kruger as Abigail Gates, John Voight as Patrick Gates, Helen Mirren as Dr. Emily Appleton Gates. Ed Harris as Mitchell Wilkinson, Harvey Keitel back as Sadisky, Bruce Greenwood as the President of the United States, and Ty Burrell from Modern Family as Connor, the White House curator and Abigail's new swinging dick.
Ew, inappropriate. This is family friendly.
No, the movie is. Shall we go over the number of fucks you gave in Willy Wonka?
Let's not. Let's say we did.
Now that we've handled that business, let's get down to business with our segment, Inception to Perception, where I dig shallowly into the internet to find out how this movie came to be.
Don't get on the set, get ready to shoot, and then ask for rewrites. Studios do this crap all the time, and they wonder why they end up with a shit movie.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Movie? You know, I hate the word movie. I don't make movies. I make films.
And again, not a whole lot about this one.
Well, yeah, that's all I got. I don't even have anything.
Yeah, I'm not even going to read. This is not even worth reading, honestly. It just isn't. So let's just go straight to the do you remember, Caitlin.
Oh, wait, really? We're not even going to go through it?
It's not worth it. There's nothing there that actually freaking
works
matters.
For me. No, I don't remember when I saw it.
Yep.
I'm sure I saw it in theaters because I was really excited about it.
I like how you wrote shocker in there, like shocker. And I'm like, but you knew the last movie.
Yeah, but we back. We back. I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this twice in a row. I have no clue when I saw this.
Yeah, I mean, who cares? Whatever.
I almost feel like I saw this like on a plane.
Snakes on a plane.
Snuck up on me, I'm
sure. Motherfucking snakes on the motherfucking plane.
It's a family show.
It's a family show.
All right, hey, let's just get into this goddamn train wreck,
okay? Let's just go for it.
Here we go.
Abigail.
What's she doing here?
What are you doing here?
Your dad called me. Said your next clue was here.
But she's really there.
Look, Ben.
Drop her. Lose her.
I want to help.
Well, that's very nice, but it's kind of a bad time right now.
A bad time right now?
It's a bad time.
Okay, I just flew all the way to London to offer my help.
Ben,
and what? Now
plan.
You decided you don't need it.
You're the one who's making a scene right now.
I'm not not making a scene right now.
No, we want to make a scene.
Well, then fine! If that's what you want, then let's have it out right now!
Ah, so subtle.
Well, let me guess! It's the wrong time! It's the wrong place! I'm wrong again! Wrong about us! Wrong about Thomas Gates! Wrong that you'd like the Queen Anne chair!
You're wrong to assume I'd like the chair!
You see? You see, everybody, listen to this. This is more interesting than that. She thinks that even when I'm right, I'm wrong! Isn't that right, Abigail? Just because I answer a question quickly doesn't make it wrong.
Not if the right answer is something we need to figure out together as a couple. That's what couples do.
Sure. And you and your missus take it outside.
Oh, now look what you've done. You brought the little bobbies down on us.
You take the missus outside. I'm staying right here.
Ben! Whee!
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. Been drinking, have we?
Just a nip. Just pop down to the pub for a pint. Bit of all right. Going to arrest the man for that. Going to detain a blighter for enjoying his whiskey.
It's all right, that's enough, sir.
Beggars and mash.
Sir?
Bubbles and squeak.
What?
Smoky old pie.
Sir?
Haggis!
That's it. Dismount the banister.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Here they are, standing in a row. Small ones, come big on. Ones, some as big as your head!
That was brilliant.
In 1865, John Wilkes Booth and Michael O'Loughlin, both members of the Knights of the Golden Circle, enter a tavern and approach Thomas Gates, Ben Gates' great-great-grandfather, a well-known puzzle solver, to decode a message written in Booth's diary. Thomas begins to translate the message. While he does so, Booth leaves to assassinate President Abraham Lincoln. Thomas solves the puzzle, a clue to a map to Cibola, the city of gold, but realizes the men are still loyal to the South and have a sinister motive for finding the treasure. He rips several pages from the diary and throws them in the fireplace. Thomas is shot, and the gunman attempts to retrieve the pages, but only obtains a page fragment. What do you think of the opening?
Go for it. No, I'm going to let you start. You start. You have lots of thoughts.
I just said, so Booth leaves the tavern.
Yes.
Jumps on his horse.
Yes.
Rides to the theater.
Yes. That's right next door.
Tavern and theater right next door to you. I do think it's kind of funny that solving the puzzles is being implied as a hereditary thing. It would have been nice if they came up to it and Gates was like, what the hell is this gibberish?
Yeah, no. And I hadn't thought about that until I read where you wrote that. I actually like this movie opening minus the Booth part because that whole thing's just cringy.
Yeah.
You know, you watch him like shoot Abraham Lincoln and then, you know, he like swings off the balcony and like breaks his leg and is hobbling away and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, did he break his leg in the movie?
Yeah. Because you can see him like kind of.
I didn't see the hobble. I guess
straggling.
I wasn't paying attention at that point.
But
okay.
I actually like this because you are focusing in on a specific story rather than in movie one. We see a montage of kind of how we got here. So I do like that. It's a little bit more intimate. That is funny about the hereditary part.
Like, I'm just like, oh, they're all puzzle solvers. They're just genetically brought down.
They are.
Like, it would have been funny if he was like, I can't do this. And his son grabs it and goes, putting down words like, oh, maybe it's. Skips a generation every now and then.
Well, it didn't.
And they got the guy that played Lincoln, and he's a dead ringer.
Yeah, well, obviously, it's also blurry.
You don't see half his face.
Yeah.
From the back, though.
From the
dead
back,
ringer.
It is spot on.
Booth did jump to the stage and yell, Sic Semper Tyrannis, but then he added, the South is avenged. We don't get that in the movie.
No, we don't.
Yeah, but as for whether or not he swung down in a swashbuckling way, I have no idea.
Dear God, Booth, wherever you are, I hope you didn't.
My feeling is that they did that just to get some action.
I don't know,
in here.
But maybe he did. Because if he was watching from a box, he'd have to be able to escape. Although, to be fair, why would you swing into a crowd of people?
Well, he was swinging to the stage.
I know, but you're closer to patrons than you're closer to a wider group of people, you know, more people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really care. I don't care enough to have this conversation.
Well, 140 years later.
And we back.
Yeah, 140 years later, we care again. Ben Gates is telling his great-great-grandfather's story at a civilian heroes conference. Black market dealer Mitch Wilkinson displays one of the 18 missing pages of John Wilkes Booth's diary with Thomas Gates' name on it, convincing everyone that Thomas was not only a conspirator, but the grand architect of the Lincoln assassination. I think this is a neat reveal.
I feel like it's a little bit of a stretch, and I can't remember exactly how the dialogue goes, but basically Nicolas Cage's character making this whole connection that if Thomas Gates hadn't solved this puzzle, then like the Civil War would have been overturned and, you know, like the country would have ceased to exist. It's like, okay, sir, the war was over. I don't really understand, but sure, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
I like the fact that we saw the actual incident at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's better than the first one.
But the problem is that when you show the actual incident, you no longer have the mystery as to whether or not who's right and who's wrong.
True.
You know who's right.
Yeah. Well, perception versus reality. But yes, I agree with you.
So there is a way, and I came up with this to fix this movie, which is have Ben narrate the story during the introduction. When the claim is made by Wilkinson, have him narrate the montage of that same night that backs up his claim. Finally, at the end, you have a montage that near the end of the shows what actually happened. Instead, they give the truth away in the first 10 minutes.
That would have added like 10 minutes to this already incessantly boring movie.
Don't get me wrong. We'll get into the pacing of this thing. This is rough.
But no, I mean, yeah.
And this reminds me of something. Point. You said this in the last movie. With all the buried treasure laying around this country, right. You think we'd remember where the hell we put it?
Like, well, I don't understand. We are not just lying on treasure.
Not just treasure.
Am I the only one that thinks that we probably don't have 18 million different buried treasures around the United States? I don't know. Maybe I'm ignorant in that, but
I was talking to JC yesterday. We had lunch yesterday, and I was like, hey, I almost called you to the national treasure things. He goes, oh, I got things to say about that. And he goes, what? I go, well, first of all, we have this thing that we've had for a long time called sonar, and we've kind of combed the entire country of all of this stuff decades ago. At Borders Books, we find Riley. And Riley is selling his book, The Templar Treasure. And by selling, I mean not selling at all. His car gets towed and he goes to find Ben. I think it's kind of great that just when Ben needs help, Riley's car gets towed. He's dead broke because of a tax audit. Hey, look, everyone, we're back at the beginning of the first National Treasure.
I mean, it's reality. Like, this is like people that win the lottery and they're broke within 8 months because they just have no idea what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, when he mentions the whole, like, yeah, I talked to some finance guy, you know, and he told me how to invest my, I'm like, first of all, okay, maybe this is just, I know a little bit more about finance, and that is nobody, if you fall for this, then you deserve to be the sidekick to Ben Gates.
Oh, come on. Leave Riley alone.
I know.
Damn
you,
it.
This is the Riley Defense Podcast.
No, I agree. Like, homeboy.
Yeah.
Your money's off in the Caribbean somewhere getting a nice tan.
But as a writer of a sequel, you don't want to put everybody back where they were at the beginning of the first movie. You want to continue the story from where they are.
I don't disagree. But again, you can't continue the movie where it was because the movie fucking ended.
Well, they were all filthy rich. So you go from that point on. Now they have resources as opposed to the first movie when they didn't have resources.
But again, there should not be multiple treasures to go hunt down. It should be done.
They should be done with the first one. It's over.
It should be done. It should be done.
That being said, there's a sequel series coming on the way for Disney Plus, which you're excited about.
I mean, I want to know what's on page 47.
We'll never find out.
Maybe. Maybe not.
I do like that Riley's holding a picture of himself with a stand-up poster. Just walking around with it.
This is why I see myself in Riley. I said it last time. I'm going to say it again. I mean, who, if not me, would have a cardboard cutout of themselves? I would like to know.
I don't think you, here's the thing. I think you gotta give yourself more credit. There's no way I could see you walking around with it.
Maybe not like, walking around with it, but it would be in my house and I would sit there and like say, you know, like when Cher in Clueless is going through her outfits and you can totally tell that there's that subtle hint of like, damn girl, you look good. I would totally, I would totally go up to that cardboard cutout of myself and be like, damn girl, I'm feeling you.
By the way, a lot has happened so far. It's only been 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, yeah.
Like, I looked at the time and I was like, it's only been 10?
I feel like I don't have anything nice to say.
That's
unless
okay.
Unless it's about Riley.
That's the joy of this. Back at Ben Manor, it's revealed that Abigail isn't talking to Ben and has locked him out of his home. Thankfully, Riley can break into anything. Abigail comes home from a date, and Ben and Riley ruin the date, and Abigail sends her paramour home. He convinces her to take a look at the page under infrared as Abigail's facility after bargaining away his Boston tea tables. This is another way of getting the characters all back in the same spot they were at the very beginning.
I just find it really funny that, you know, now they're broken up. Well, sure, they didn't have chemistry to begin with.
Right. Like, although they tried to force it at the end of the last movie.
Yeah, which was a mistake. Anywho.
She does get her stand-up moment. She goes, I guess my opinion doesn't matter. He says this. He goes, I learned that the word so, so I guess my opinion doesn't matter. So you seem to always know what's best. So I guess I'm invisible. And I thought, so I guess the franchise figured out what the problem was with Abigail in the first movie.
And I'm here for this. Yeah. Abigail kind of gets her mojo back a little.
She gets it for about 3 minutes.
Yeah. And then Helen Mirren takes it away.
Yeah. Well, then she says, he goes, I'll let you have the Boston tea tables. She goes, both of them. And I'm like,
You're just being mean. That's not semantics. This is semantics. She is reinforcing the fact that you realize both of them too. They are a set.
They're a plural. He says it plural though. He doesn't say, I'll give you a one. He says, I'll give you the bottom. There's two.
She wants to be sure they're a package deal. She wants to make sure she gets the package.
Yeah. While analyzing the page, they decide to use the old check the back of the document trick from the first movie. And voila, he discovers a cipher pointing to Edouard Laboulaye hidden on the back of the diary page. Turns out the clue, quote, the debt that all men pay is the five-letter word death.
That's just, I mean, ominous and dark and twisty.
I would have liked, to have seen it be the word death attached to something a little bit more.
I would have said taxes.
Or give me liberty or give me death.
Well, that's too easy.
But you need an easy thing in here.
No, you don't. Yeah, not when it's Ben Gates. There's a reason this treasure has stayed buried since, what was it, 1400s?
Thank God crazy ass Nicolas Cage got a clue.
I mean, he won an Oscar and we didn't know about that. That's so anything's possible.
Very true.
I love you, Nick Cage.
We do have a timetable now. This is a perfect example of our press, though, because they're talking about, well, we have to figure this out before it's leaked to the press that Thomas Gates is a bad dude. Well, why don't you just wait?
Because the world doesn't work like that.
But the world doesn't give a shit about something that happened in 1865 either. Especially
debatable.
When it's
debatable.
No, here's the thing. They'll care about John Wilkes Booth. But they don't care about the man behind the man behind the man of John Wilkes Booth.
People care that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. He's like everybody's favorite president.
Right. They care about that. That's why they know the name John Wilkes Booth.
But you have to think about it. Ben is now a celebrity.
Who?
Ben Gates. Like, he is now a celebrity.
So is this them trying to cancel him?
Maybe. I just think that, like, he's relevant. He's relevant. So people are going, like, it now makes the story interesting. Whereas if he had no connection, it doesn't matter. But the fact that he just solved the Templar treasure, he's a historical celebrity. I didn't know they existed, but he's Bill Nye. He is Bill Nye.
But for history. Who would be the Bill Nye for history?
In real life?
Like, I'm trying to think of someone who's like, you go, that right there is the historian du jour.
Tucker Carlson? I don't know. Diane Sawyer?
I mean, those
Christian Amanpour? Like, I don't know.
Those are journalists, but like when we think of science, we think Neil deGrasse Tyson, Bill Nye. We don't have anybody for history.
No, we do. We just don't know them because they are
they don't get FaceTime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Back at the FBI, the next morning, the papers read that Ben Gates has been canceled because his great-great-grandfather allegedly was a co-conspirator in killing Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Sadusky has his men check it out because something is fishy here.
Oh, Sadusky.
Forget all that goodwill Ben did. His super distant relative did some bad things, so now Ben sucks.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Welcome to America.
That's how it works.
Stupid. Abigail meets with Wilkinson on her own and brings evidence of the back page of the Booth diary. And this scene is juxtaposed with Ben, Thomas, and Riley figuring out the Edouard Laboulaye thing, which is the sculptor of the Statue of Liberty, which could be tied to a treasure map.
I feel like the whole thing is a really far reach. We're talking about an ancient Aztec Native American Mayan culture. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Think there's Incan in there too?
Right. I don't know. Some sort of ancient civilization gold treasure thing.
There's
happening.
There's a city of gold.
Yeah, happening. But somehow that's connected to Abraham Lincoln's assassination. You're probably listening to me being like, this bitch is so dumb, but that's how dumb this logic is.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. So anyway, he travels to Paris, where he finds a clue engraved on the torch of the scale model of the Statue of Liberty on the Leo Signet, referring to the two resolute desks. Only problem is that Laboulaye wrote this in 1876 based on a cipher written in 1865. The resolute desks were not separated from the hull of the HMS Resolute and turned into desks until 1879. Busted. You've been historied, biatch.
I don't have anything to say. I'm done.
Back at the FBI, Sandusky and his friends are spinning their wheels, even though there is no discernible need for the FBI to be involved in this case whatsoever. Meanwhile, Wilkinson clones Patrick Gates' cell phone in order to track Ben's whereabouts. So with all those artifacts at Thomas Gates' house, they don't have a security system?
No. But how much stuff does he really have?
He's the dumbest smart people.
But how much stuff does he really have?
His whole house is Ben Gates' stuff all jammed in there, remember?
Oh. Plot twist.
Yeah.
Crap.
He had to move out.
Well,
the tea tables are there apparently.
But you know what? That's Ben's fault. Make it work with your lady. So you didn't it work.
Let's not look at Abigail in all this.
I mean, Abigail didn't have anything to say in the first movie, so I really don't know if she's the problem or not.
Here's the thing. I believe Abigail had nothing wrong with this. This is all Nick Cage. It's all Ben Gates' issue, I feel.
Probably.
Because everything she asked, all the so's, I'm like, those are rational conversations.
1,000,000%.
Yes. Ben then heads to London to look at the desk at Buckingham Palace with the help of his friend Riley Poole and estranged girlfriend Abigail Chase. Ben makes a scene by pretending to be drunk and starting a fake argument with Abigail, and they are both arrested. Thanks to Riley, who had previously hacked into the security system, they escape the cell and reach the desk via service elevator. From the Queen's desk, Ben obtains an ancient wooden plank with ancient symbols carved into it. A chase ensues in the streets of London, where Wilkinson eventually obtains the plank, but not before Ben manages to photograph it.
You go first.
So we get our Mission Impossible scene. Riley goes over the blueprints to break into an unbreakable security system. And of course, all goes to plan.
I just want a poll of what do we think is easier to break into?
The Declaration would be easier.
The archives with the Declaration of Independence or Buckingham Palace, and literally like all up in her bedroom. Like basically they're in her bedroom.
Exactly.
It doesn't.
If you've watched any episodes of The Crown, you've seen all this.
I don't. Yeah. I don't know.
Is Riley MacGyver?
Yes, obviously. He is our tech nerd.
How has this guy not found a job aside from treasure hunting?
He doesn't need a job. He thought his money was being well taken care of. He didn't think he needed to work.
But he knew all this before he became a treasure hunter, too.
Well, I don't... Yeah. What's your point?
Just wondering, like... I always wonder about that in any movie.
He was writing a book. He was writing a book.
Before he did National Treasure, the first one? Because he knew all this stuff before that.
Oh, no, we talked about this. Okay. He did some cubicle desk job. We talked about this.
Thank you. Thank you. I almost get the feeling that when Nicolas Cage is acting like he's drunk.
It's totally for real.
We're seeing crazy ass personality.
Totally for real.
Including that wild ass walk he does down the stairs. The fuck was that?
You're wrong to assume. You were wrong to assume Nick Cage. And why is she here? She just thinks that like maybe he might need some fragment help somewhere. And so she flies to London.
Here she is again, a tag along.
I just don't, whatever. I don't understand.
Like there was something you could have written in this to make it so we had to bring her along.
Right.
Like, give her some value.
I know. Damn it, Turtle Top.
Queen Victoria. Really? 1876 has been the magical year so far. That should have been the first combination tried.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was a little ridiculous. I do think it's cool to see these like Chinese puzzle boxes, though, because those are a real thing.
I like those.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And as the bad guys race through a crowded area to get the item the good guys have, I'm reminded of this exact scene in National Treasure.
This one's better.
The pet peeve of mine is when a sequel does the exact same things as the original did. This one's better.
This is a better chase scene.
You liked it better?
Yeah, there's way more... consequence. You know, they're like running people over in restaurants and shit's getting broken off left and right. Like it's
in the first
stake.
One there were guns being shot all over the society.
Okay, but to be fair, it was like in the middle of the night in DC. There weren't a lot of cars on the road. There weren't a lot of people out. She's just kind of flailing around. Like it's fine.
She's hanging onto the truck for dear
she's
life.
She's fine. I think this scene is more action and adventure than the first one.
And I do like them using the traffic cams to get the photo of the wood.
I couldn't tell if you were being sarcastic about that.
I wrote it so that I could say it.
I know, but when I read it, I was like, I feel like he's just being mean. I can't tell.
No,
I agree. I think that's clever.
I think it is clever. And that's something that a puzzle person would figure out. Someone who thinks outside the box.
Yeah.
But you also got to know which traffic cams are using the cameras.
Well, and I didn't know that Europe used traffic cams, so there's that.
Yeah. Ben, Riley, and Abigail head to Patrick's house. That's not how you spell head. And they show him the wood. Patrick discerns that one of the... Patrick discerns that one of the symbols means Sibylla, a lost city of gold. We get a history lesson on Sibylla. At Ben's insistence, Patrick reluctantly asks his ex-wife and Ben's mother, Dr. Emily Appleton, for help in translating the symbols. Okay.
We're now in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Thank you.
And the Goonies.
Thank you.
If they had a baby.
The first movie, you stretched my imagination.
Yeah.
And it was a fun romp through the conspiracy catacombs, but a city of gold, especially one that was admittedly a myth by the turn of the 17th century, the Gates family is better than this. They should have brought back better writers for this movie.
I just, again, there's only so much you can do with a treasure hunting plot. you just, it's done. Yeah. It's done. I think anything they would have done would have seemed like a reach.
Unless they were like, if they ended the last movie with them all super rich and now they're famous as being these super treasure hunter historians, what if another country approached them?
I think that's maybe the only way it could seem less tacky.
Like, it would have been cool for them to do it in Britain. And like, this is
in Britain.
In Great Britain. Why?
Indubitably.
Yes. But you do it there because that can be linked to American history also.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you.
They travel to the University of Maryland to see Mama Bear. She helps them decipher the wood, but points out that some of the glyphs are partial, leading Ben to conclude another plank must be hidden in the other resolute desk in the Oval Office.
Seems easy enough.
I'll say it. Helen Mirren is kind of hot. Old, but kind of hot.
I love her.
Yeah.
She is the feminist energy we need in this movie.
Preach.
She is.
But
we're here for Helen.
Helen's faking an American accent.
Yeah, I...
And sometimes that soft English accent comes through.
It's weird.
We've broken into Buckingham Palace. Now we're going to try the White House.
You're doing too much.
Thank you.
You're doing too much.
I like what you wrote too, because I completely agree.
The Fast and Furious paradox.
Exactly.
Yes.
At what point does it go from ridiculous to stupid?
Ever. Nothing will happen to you ever.
Ben and Abigail coax Abigail's new love interest, Connor, who works at the White House, into letting them into the office to see the desk. Ben discovers that the second plank is missing, but he does find a stamp bearing the seal of the Book of Secrets. Riley tells Ben that the Book of Secrets contains documents collected by presidents for presidents' eyes only, covering such controversial subjects as the 18 minutes erased from the Watergate tapes, Area 51, and the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But all-star of this scene is Ben arguing with a 10-year-old about his family's legacy, which might be my favorite scene in the whole movie.
And I bet that he's done this in real life, or probably does this in real life, like on the reg.
I could totally see this.
1,000,000%. Also, if you are putting something in a book of secrets, secrets being, you know, kind of the important word, why on God's green earth are you going to put a seal of the Book of Secrets where you took the secret to put it in a secret book?
Why leave a clue to a clue to
a
clue?
Okay. If you're president, you should already know about the Book of Secrets. Therefore, the seal should not matter.
And I don't know, and this is something I'll address later. Call me crazy. If it's a book, the last place I'm hiding it is a home for books. Ben, when he says, yeah, Connor rocks. That's Nick Cage also. That's not Ben Gates. No. A dropped earring is what it takes to distract Connor. Oh, nope. That's Diane Kruger's TNA right there.
Well,
got
it. They're dating.
That's her value.
They're dating. I know. I get it. It's despicable.
Yes.
Actually, I'm going to go fling myself off a building for even, you know, defending that.
Riley knowing the factoid about the Book of Secrets is the same as daylight savings time in the first movie. He's all excited, and they're kind of like, dude, tell us the goddamn thing. You're a man.
Made out with my friend.
Back at the FBI, Ben... What is that from, by the way?
Vanderpump Rules. You should look it up.
Someday, just randomly, I'm going to say, give me a summary of Vanderpump. And I'll just let you go for about 20 minutes.
I don't even think I need 20 minutes.
10 minutes.
Okay.
Five.
Cool.
Yeah. Back at the FBI, Ben meets with Sadusky about whether the president has a secret book, and Sadusky confirms that the only way to see it is to be elected president, since it has passed from president to president. However, Ben, being someone who thinks outside the box, decides to do as he did in the previous movie, where he stole the Declaration of Independence, and raise it to a kidnapping charge by stealing the motherfucking president of the United States. Mark it. 15 minutes, 44 seconds. All believably, he has left my body at this point in time. I'm now watching a fantasy.
I don't have anything to say.
This is,
I really don't at this point.
This is where, in Fast and Furious, the car goes to space.
The car lands on you, but you're going to be fine.
Which, by the way, in F9, a car does go to space.
Right. Oh, what?
I told you. It was ridiculous. They take a Pontiac Fiero, put a rocket on the back of it, shoot it into space.
Is somebody driving it?
Tyrese Gibson and Ludacris.
Luda.
And then they use nitrous to slam it into a satellite.
You're actually fucking with me, right?
I'm not.
Wait, so how did they land?
Well, they go to the International Space Station, and then they're obviously it's just like 3 weeks later, so they must have gotten a ride back. But yeah.
What?
I'm telling you, in this movie, they go.
Okay. So I need to go see it.
there's a satellite thing. That's a satellite issue with the villain. He wants to get all the satellites. So they go, well, how are we going to stop him if we can't do it on the ground? And they look in the distance and they see a rocket. The whole audience starts laughing hysterically. Like, of course we would do this. We'll steal the president.
Cool. Adding that to my list of things to do immediately.
So worth it. That's a movie you got to watch with others to enjoy its communal experience.
Yes.
Okay. Patrick, Abigail, and Riley all try to talk him out of it for a total of 9 seconds. Well, and then they agree to do it because it's a kidnapping.
And they know nothing's going to happen, so it's fine.
Ben crashes the president's birthday party at Mount Vernon. He convinces the president to follow him into a secret tunnel where he confronts him about the book. The president sympathetically warns Ben that his actions will be interpreted as an attempt to kidnap the president, which is a federal offense. The president reveals the location of the book in the Library of Congress. I just got to skip down here. He just walked by the security with a cute anecdote about losing a cute brunette.
But honestly, I think it's kind of clever. I mean, they're in the fucking woods.
But I kind of expect more out of our Secret Service.
Why?
Because.
They're in the woods.
Wouldn't you have noticed them going out there first? Wouldn't they have been like, person going out there with a cute brunette, keep an eye out?
I don't know. I'm not in the Secret Service. Oh, or am
wait,
I?
Wait, you're not?
Well, you wouldn't know. It's secret.
It's not that secret.
That's
not how the Secret Service works. Okay.
It should be.
Bruce Greenwood.
Yes. Thoughts.
I like him.
I do too.
Every time he shows up in a movie, I'm excited.
I know, I do too.
Like, I just go, how come he hasn't gotten bigger roles?
And he's attractive.
He's a good looking
dude.
So I've got my Helen, you've got your Bruce.
I know.
I do get the president is curious, but are we really to believe that the president went into a cellar with a now marred individual and without the watchful eye of a Secret Service? Doesn't anybody notice the president's gone from his own fucking birthday party?
No, the Secret Service go down there with him.
Right, but then he stops them and says, don't come any further than this door.
Well, yeah, because they're going into this tiny little shaft. I don't think they could, like, fit everybody in there.
Well, I think he just wanted a private conversation with Ben.
No. He said, I don't think anybody's going to harm me all the way down here. And so he stops them.
Yeah.
They go into this little tiny room because it's tiny. Then Ben shuts it. And that's when they start freaking out.
Yeah. I guess I looked at it. I was kind of like, you know, Prez, you don't have say as to where the Secret Service goes. They go where they need to go.
I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe they do.
And then we hear about page 47 of the book. Hope that mystery is answered
still
by the end.
Waiting for that one.
And Library of Congress closes at 5 p.m. every day.
I would think that libraries should be like churches. They should be open all the time.
24/7?
Yeah.
In the book, Ben finds a picture of the missing plank from the desk and an entry by President Coolidge, who found the plank in 1924, had it destroyed, and commissioned Gutzon Borglum to carve Mount Rushmore to erase the map's landmarks. I do think it's funny the book's in the library. I think it's been more humorous that there's a random combination lock in the bookshelves and nobody's ever stumbled upon that before.
People clearly don't do anything in the Library of Congress.
And if there's one thing that we've learned about these movies, it's that law enforcement, Secret Service, government in general is incompetent.
I just.
It's what this movie's doing. Yeah. I mean, they'd have to be in order for this to get this far. Emily is confronted by Wilkinson. Patrick comes to find Emily in order to translate a picture of the U.S. Resolute desk wood. Emily gives a false translation because she knows Wilkinson is nearby, but Patrick doesn't know it. He tries to express his feelings for her, but she shoos him away because Wilkinson is nearby and she doesn't want him to get hurt. Wilkinson emerges from the shadows with a letter from Queen Victoria, which has the final clue. Then he burns the letter and insists Emily join him as he finds Sybilla before Ben. Aw, she does love him.
I know, it is kind of tender.
Yeah.
And depressing.
A little bit. Ben, Riley, Abigail, and Patrick head to Mount Rushmore, where they meet Wilkinson, who has kidnapped Ben's mother. He helps them. Yeah, you might as well stretch at this point.
Right.
He helps them find the entrance of a cave containing the legendary Native American city of gold, Sybilla. While exploring the small room, Riley accidentally touches an old rope that... Did I skip something here? Nope, I didn't. Okay. I forgot about the water on the rock thing.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they pour some water on some rocks and... Look, it's there. While exploring the small room, Riley accidentally touches an old rope that immediately breaks, causing a large hammer to fall on the counterweight that held the stone door open to fall over. The door rolls shut, sealing the group in, with the only way out is forward. Riley finds a small golden idol in a room. All but Patrick and Emily follow before the floor below drops them into a large pit where they land on a large platform. They are forced to bounce the platform on all four corners to prevent it from falling. Abigail finds a ladder, which she must walk evenly to the center of the platform while one stays at the end of the ladder. Using a heavy gold idol to help Ben up, he jumps up the ladder just as the platform gives up and collapses.
Keep going.
Yeah, I will.
You're doing great.
Thanks. My voice is gone. When Patrick and Emily being separated, they find an alternate route to throw a pile of stones. They find themselves over a gap in a bridge, with the only way being the using of a tightrope. Ben and the others find a large room with the sound of water flowing. Using a torch on oil placed in the stairway rails, they believe this room to be the city, but rather another puzzle. Ben noticed the water flowing down after finding a gold statue. They turn a large wheel in the middle of the room, which closes the stone floodgate and the waterfalls. They eventually find the city of gold and are reunited with Patrick and Emily. Holy shit. Reunited feels so good.
We're watching The Goonies now.
Yes.
And we're also watching montages of the first freaking movie.
Yep.
That's all I have to say. That's really, you go for it. You lay into it.
So to find this cave.
To find this cave. Yes.
They have to find a rock island.
Yes.
Which is a rock just sticking out of the water.
Yes.
They only have 5 bottles of water, so the water bottles must be magically refilling because they're going to run out.
It's a small rock.
And then they find it. They stick their hand in it, pull the trigger. It opens up a door on the other side of the river. This is some...
Why do you sound so like this just couldn't happen all the time? Like this doesn't.
I don't know why. I don't know why I sound like that.
It sounds.
Yeah. What a magical.
It happens all the
time. What a magical country we live in.
I'm telling you, Mount Rushmore, baby.
It's a little golden man with a tiny little torso.
Oh God! Just get me through this movie. I'm over this.
When they're on the counter, wait. No, Wilkinson's an idiot. He clearly didn't listen to the directions.
Well, he's a man.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
That's it.
Yeah. I do like the scenes with Mirren and Voight.
I know. I like their dynamic. And they actually have some chemistry on screen.
This is what I hope the next National Treasure TV show is, which is them when they were younger. And he was doing the treasure hunting and she was kind of
That would be interesting.
Because I love their dynamic. And if you can find two characters just like them, you have a series. Oh, wow. Another oil is lit on fire and lights up the entire room gag. But this time, it's not the treasure. And Helen Mirren, your boobies are showing a little bit.
Stop. Why are we drawing attention to this?
And if you didn't get the cleavage shot when Patrick and Emily rope swing over the cliff, don't worry. We're going to do a wet t-shirt shot later on in the movie. This was not necessary.
No. And us talking about it right now is also not necessary.
No, because it sticks out. You got to talk about that. However, due to extreme pressure from the water, the floodgates begin to leak and slowly break apart from the pressure. The floodgates soon give way, as well as other gates burst and rapidly flood the city, just as the group were collecting large gold fragments of the city in order to leave the city of gold when it suddenly begins flooding. One person has to stay behind to hold open the stone door to the drainage tunnel beneath the city, an action which would result in certain death. When Ben becomes trapped under the door, Wilkinson has to choose either to stay behind and sacrifice himself or everybody will drown. He chooses to give the others a chance to escape, and Ben promises to give Wilkinson part of the credit for discovering himself.
The bad guy would never sacrifice himself.
Thank you.
Never.
He has shown no inclination at this point to have any good in him.
No.
Now, that being said, honestly, this could have been sold as a new ride at Disney World.
I know. When you said that, it got me kind of giddy. I was like, oh man, that'd be so fun.
It would be. Abigail is still with them, in case you didn't know.
I had forgotten.
Yeah, she's just a warm body in the group at this point. And Ben clears his family's name with the discovery and is cleared of all charges when the president tells everyone that Ben did not kidnap him, but actually saved his life when the secret passage they were looking at was accidentally activated. Everyone, including Wilkinson, is given credit for the discovery of the lost city of gold.
Are we done yet?
And that's all, folks.
Yay.
According to the top critics at Rotten Tomatoes, it has a tomato meter reading of 30%, 9 fresh and 21 rotten. Yes, 9 people thought this was a movie that was a 6 out of 10 or higher.
You 9 people suck and I hate you all.
But let's take a look at what those critics said about this one from the rotten side. That's always fun. Namurata Yoshi of Outlook said, "The plot is illogical to the core, which one would have accepted had the film had been a sheer roller coaster ride, leaving you little time to notice the holes in the plot."
Fair.
Richard Roper is back. This guy who hates everything. This just might be the silliest movie ever to feature three Academy Award winners.
Oh my God. Oh, we didn't even think about that. Oh no.
And Jeff Shannon of Seattle Times says the movie's convoluted hide and seek plot also demands a White House break-in that makes about as much sense as subprime mortgage rates.
Damn.
Okay, the movie's over. Were you entertained, Caitlin?
Judging by the big ass yawn I just did, no. Even talking about it is making me bored and tired irritable.
I was pissed off doing this. I was pissed off writing this because, again, when I hit the 10-minute mark, I was like, it's going to take me 4 hours to do this movie.
I just feel like I don't have a lot of things to say about it. I feel like this is the quietest I've been on a podcast ever because I'm just like,
You've been super busy, though.
What do you say? No, not even that, but it's just like, what the hell do I say? They're in some lost city of gold? Cool. Okay. I'm just not that here for it.
Well, hey, you know, you ready to figure out if the awards got it right?
I'm sure they did.
Okay.
0000000.
You know what? Let's do this right. Okay, at the Academy Awards, it got zero nominations and zero wins. And guess what? Same at the Golden Globe. Zero nominations, zero wins. Hey, at the Saturn Awards, where they love these types of movies, zero nominations and zero wins. At the MTV Movie Awards, even they thought it sucked with zero nominations, zero wins. But, oh, I'm sorry, it did get a nomination, but Transformers beat it at the MTV Movie Awards. That's how bad this was. Now, it did win, it got nominated for two Razzies.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the Razzies?
Mm-hmm.
The Razzies are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They were nominated for Worst Actor. Nicolas Cage was nominated for his collection of movies that year. Ghost Rider, National Treasure, Book of Secrets, and Next. But he lost to Eddie Murphy, who only did one movie called Norbit.
I mean, that's pretty good because you had a higher chance of winning with three movies.
I would say so.
So good job, Nick.
But they were also got a nomination for Worst Supporting Actor with John Voight, who, although was good in National Treasure, did movies like Bratz, September Dawn, and Transformers.
I like Transformers. I don't know why you're hating on Transformers.
And Eddie Murphy won again for Worst Supporting Actor because he played two roles in it. he was bad in everything
he did. That's got to be such a blow to your confidence. Dear Lord.
But that's it. So, all right, on to our next segment titled Top 3, Bottom 3. This is where we talk about the three things we want to highlight in this movie. And then we go over the three things that are bad, unforgivable, or downright travesties. Let's start with the top three. You want to go first or second?
I'll go.
Okay, go.
All right, here are my top three. Short, sweet, and to the point. Helen is a great addition. We are here for Helen. She is feisty. She is strong. She is intelligent. She adds substance to this movie that Abigail should have gotten to begin with. Damn it, Diane, you should have read your contract better. All right. I preferred the introduction to this movie over the introduction to the first movie.
Okay.
I do. And I already talked about that earlier, so I'm not going into that again. And finally, gotta pay homage
to your boy.
To my boy, Riley. I feel you and I see you. That's it.
Riley is your MVP.
That's all I've got. Well, come on. What else am I supposed to pick?
No, but he's literally the most valuable player in this whole movie.
That's my point. Yeah. Like what? Go for it.
Fine, I will. Okay, so my number three, the addition of Helen Mirren and Bruce Greenwood to the cast was awesome. She is a better role model than Diane Kruger's character, and he's a great president.
Yeah.
My number two, anytime Mirren and Voight are on the screen together.
Yeah.
I could watch a movie of them.
Agreed.
And my number one, Nicolas Cage arguing with a 10-year-old. I love the scene. I could watch that on repeat.
Fair.
Okay. Now the bottom three. Time to vent. So go for it.
I'm also going to keep this short and sweet because I just don't even have the energy to give this movie life. Page 47. I need to know, Turtle Top. What is on page 47? Fucking tell me. It's a really crappy remake.
Oz has spoken.
Thank you. Thank you. Drop the mic. Okay. This is a really crappy remake of The Goonies, and I'm gonna give you a really unpopular opinion. I don't even like The Goonies that much. I know.
Round one, fight.
How could you not like The Goonies?
It's just not. Okay, so to be fair, this is not a movie I grew up watching.
Okay.
So that's a lot of it.
That makes sense.
The nostalgia piece is just not there for me. it was just not. And actually, I wonder if it's where I grew up, because none of my friends, like, it was just not a movie. Like, I never watched it in any friends' houses. It was not at my, I don't know. Just in my neck of the, in my bubble, it just wasn't a
thing.
That's
okay.
So that's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So this is a crappy remake of The Goonies.
And
if The Goonies, Pirates of the Caribbean, and the first National Treasure, and then throw in Ludacris, all had an orgy, that's this movie. Oh my God. I've never heard that noise come out of anyone, let alone a grown ass man.
It's just in my head, I'm still hearing the echo of what you said at the beginning, which is, this is a family show, Joe. You threw Ludacris in there. Luda, Fast and the Furious.
Luda. It's the Fast and Furious paradox. I think he earned a spot. All right. And then my number one. There are not multiple treasures lying around the United States. Like, pick a better plot.
Yeah.
Pick a better plot.
Stupid. Stupid.
I'm done. Go. Yeah.
Well, my number three is the same as yours. Page 47. What the fuck is on page 47?
It's the world so damn needs important. To know.
Yeah. My number two, the schemes seem to go way too easy. At least knock one of them out and have there be some kind of conflict in the one scheme you're going to do where it doesn't go to plan and you got to do something different. Maybe that would be Abigail's contribution. Like, you guys didn't think about this. We have to do this, this, and this. Oh, look, she's a thinker. She's not just TNA.
She's blonde, so.
So are you.
Fake blonde.
And my number one, Wilkinson making the sacrifice play. Yeah, I don't buy
that. Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
I don't buy that at all. Mm-mm. All right. Time for the critics rating, and this should be really interesting to hear. We use an A to F scale here on the Movie Planet. A C is considered average, A is the highest, F is the lowest. If the movie is so bad it receives S from all the hosts, it goes to a new category movie, the Movie Planet Global Killer. But question
neither
is,
one of us wrote anything.
Oh, I did.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah, I just didn't put it in there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So the question is, what do you give National Treasure Book of Secrets in the family film genre?
Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
You can go first.
Okay.
You hate going first.
I hate going first. Well, for this one, I really wanted to sit and actually talk about it. So I did not prepare anything because I wanted to actually not just immediately be like, F.
Well, please do.
Okay. Given the fact that this is essentially the same movie with a different treasure from the first one, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of creativity. It's just reinventing the wheel. That's even being generous. It's not really even reinventing the wheel. It's just using the same damn wheel. I think our characters, similar to the first movie, lack substance. I would say the only redeeming quality are John Voight and Helen Mirren together on screen. I mean, the dynamics between characters just are really, they're stale, they're dull, they lack substance. Again, I get it's a kid-friendly film, but also, come on. There are way too many schemes in this movie. Like, there's just no way all of this would work together without some sort of consequence. Like, stealing the Declaration, cool, that's fine. That's like one thing you have to do.
Yeah.
But you're gonna tell me that you're gonna break into Buckingham Palace and the White House and kidnap the president? Like, you know, I don't understand. And the president's gonna give you top security clearance.
Right.
To look through this book of secrets, it doesn't work. I feel like it is a ripoff of a lot of different movies that already weren't that great to begin with, and then you kind of put them all together. There's a lack of relatability and a lack of realism, which I think that we were able to forgive in the first movie because it was so wound up in history and it was this idea of interacting, you know, the fans being able to interact with the screen, going through this puzzle along with the characters, etc. But there's just not, I don't know, it lacks that same vibe in the second one. I don't know. There's just something that it's just not as interactive, and it's like you don't even want to interact, quite frankly. Okay. All that being said, I also think the pacing, let me add this too. The pacing of the film blows. You're all over the world, and then all of a sudden you're in this ancient Mayan culture, whatever you want to call it. I know it's not Mayan. I apologize.
I think it was Aztec.
Whatever. Yeah. No, probably not, because that's in Mexico too. So.
Well, they were all in Central America.
Regardless, the pacing is really slow, but also really fast at the same time, which how a movie manages to do that, cool, like, yeah. Great, thanks. All in all, it's stale. I don't like it. I don't think it's engaging. I don't think it's remotely realistic. And I think you just did the same thing again, but did it a lot worse. So for that reason, I'm giving it a D.
Oh, man.
And I think I'm being generous. D minus. Let me change it.
You're going D minus?
Let's go D minus.
Oh, wow. This is going to be really interesting.
All right, go.
Okay. Okay. We have reviewed some pretty bad movies on this show. A Good Day to Die Hard, Masters of the Universe.
A Good Day.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, Alien Resurrection, and the infamous Solo, A Star Wars Story. This movie is somewhere in the middle of them all. It's not Solo, where it's so bad you'll have a great time watching it with friends. But it's also not one where you see it on TV and go, ooh, stop here, I need to see this. Okay, that being said, you actually might, because you might think it's the first movie. And then within like 20 minutes, you'll be like, oh, it's not as fun. The biggest mistake sequels make is thinking it has to follow the same beats as the first movie and just make everything bigger. It's very simplistic. However, the best sequels don't rehash scenes, plot points, or jokes. They create new scenarios so as to not get repetitive. Now, I created a sequel rubric about 5 years ago that I use for these movies to see if it's truly a good sequel. And the eyes roll. I wish you could see them. Number one, bring back the main players. Easy. I'm giving this a half check mark. Because I didn't mean it literally. They had all ended the first movie in much better circumstances. However, in this movie, they spend the first 10 minutes resetting all their growth. The second thing they gotta do is change the circumstances so that they are forced to do something different. This is a massive fail. Because they're doing the same shit. Someone's gonna steal the city of gold that Ben Gates doesn't like, so naturally Ben and company have to get there first. Christ, do something different. My number three, continue the narrative while introducing a new problem, as well as exhibiting an internal issue amongst the group. This is a fail too. The first movie could literally cease to exist and this movie would not care one bit. The internal issue is with Patrick and Emily, who spend more time separate from the group than with the group, and actually provide the newness you want out of the franchise. And it's also Abigail and Ben, which we already saw in the first movie. And the fourth thing, make you care more about the characters than you did the first time. This is a fail too, because they literally level everybody's character arc and you're starting at ground zero again. I don't care. Now, a movie that checks all the boxes has the potential to be an A. However, this movie has a half box checked and fails at the other three. So this movie is already starting at a D for me. Look, acting wise, I feel like nearly everyone was just collecting a paycheck here. It was nice to see Bruce Greenwood, Helen Mirren, and Ed Harris show up because they sell their characters. But Cage, Bartha, and Kruger, I feel like they came onto the set and the director just said, I've got no new notes for you. Just do what you remember. And then John Voight is the fulcrum of this group. He's an actor who plays to the level of those around him. When he's interacting with Cage, he's on Cage's level. When he's interacting with Mirren, he's on Mirren's level. The plot is the same plot as the last movie and almost Fast and the Furious in its level of ridiculousness. Look, if you want to sell me on the idea that there's a hidden treasure somewhere in America, okay, I'll ride the wild tide with you. But if you're going to try to then persuade me to believe that there is an entire city made of gold hidden under Mount Rushmore and nobody knew about it? Nope, sorry. You just took a Pontiac Fiero to space and hit the nitrous to take out a satellite. The director did himself no favors here either. Give these actors something different to add nuance and depth to themselves. Have some different choices be made that changes the plot structure. There is a reason why after this movie, he only directed three more movies. The Sorcerer's Apprentice, Last Vegas, and The Meg. Everything else was made for TV. Also, the action is much less at the level of this movie. This movie is telling you more than showing you, and I really think the strength of the first movie was its pacing. This movie felt like it went on forever. National Treasure was only 2 hours and 11 minutes long. This movie was 2 hours and 4 minutes long. It was shorter in time, but it felt 30 minutes longer, which means you got a writing problem, an editing problem, and a directorial problem. This movie had five writers. The last movie had three credited, but if you remember, there were nine people in the kitchen before those three even got to their script. It's a mess, and makes sense why a third movie never got past development. That being said, apparently Disney's pursuing that National Treasure TV show, which I think will actually work better as a TV series than it will a movie. Overall, bad acting, poor planning, repetitive writing choices, and bad directing finds me going to Mount Rushmore, spilling water on a rock, sticking my hand in the crevice, and pulling out a D-. I'd give it an F, but if it didn't reach that level of bad where it was funny, it was just annoying. You gave it the same grade I did.
Damn. All right.
I was so surprised by that. I was like, oh my God, no way. But it also means this is not going into the global killer pantheon. We didn't say it was a fail.
I don't think it's, I don't think it's worthy of that.
It's not The Room.
It's, yeah, it's not.
No.
It is not.
It's just bad.
It is just bad.
Okay, so now we look at the pantheon. It's coming in at number 6.
Okay.
Behind Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Well, cool.
But let's get our critics' hats off. Do you love this movie?
No, like
this
movie or none of the above? I don't like it. I don't like it. You don't even have to finish your sentence. I don't like it.
I just love whatever you write there, because I know at this point you're not going to read it, so I interpret it like 3 different ways in my head. And this one I interpret this way. Not my fave. And then I wrote this, not my fave. Because I'd written it there beforehand, I like it. So I kept rewording. I was like, how's she going to say it? And you were just like, screw it. It sucks.
Because by the time, this is why I almost don't even like writing notes. Because by the time I get to the end, whatever it was that I was thinking is either like extremely heightened or I've taken the exact opposite. In this case, it's heightened.
Yeah, this movie sucks.
So
it sucks. But I'm so, I will say this, I'm so glad we got to do this movie, because I haven't done a movie with you yet that absolutely blew. And I told you, I was like, these ones are actually more fun than the ones where we're going to go, look at the nuance of the acting in this. This is great. It's more like, this was a shit storm.
It was. It really was.
If I pitch, can you catch? Will you hold?
That's all we got time for today, Movie Planeteers. Next show, we'll look at Bull Durham for the sports fan film pantheon. You can email the Movie Planet using the address Movie Planet Podcast. Actually, Steve will be in studio for that one. Steve is coming to town. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Podbean. Give us a 4- or 5-star review. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, or follow our Instagram. The opinions expressed on the Movie Planet Podcast are those of the individual host. The Movie Planet Podcast is not affiliated with, prepared for, approved, or licensed by any entity that created any films discussed or reviewed herein. All movie clips and music included in the podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They're included herein for the purpose of reviewing no infringement is intended. Caitlin, any last words?
No. I just don't like this movie very much.
Just like, you should see her. She took her headphones on. She just looks defeated.
I
like,
just don't like this movie very much.
Sitting there going, I've got the rest of the day now. And I just don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Well,
I don't
like it. Hey, thanks for listening and happy movie watching. We're out. I need a pinch hitter called